Don't lose sight of the bigger picture. Guide your growth with Bigger Picture Business Banking. Search NetBank Bigger Picture Business Banking.
Forecasts may tell you a great deal about the forecaster, but they tell you nothing about the future, or so says Warren Buffett. Well, you can certainly decide how true you think that is. I certainly find a lot of value in looking back in the rearview mirror a little and forecasting out into the future. And with 2021 seeing vaccine rollout across the world, businesses and whole economies move from their immediate response to the pandemic to putting in place the levers for recovery ahead of preparing for the next normal, whatever that is. And there will be various opportunities and challenges within that for private equity investors. Now, the fundamental principles which drive private equity investment strategies, such as investing into high quality assets, partnering with strong management teams and focused exit strategies, are expected to support private equity remaining a resilient asset class and certainly supporting the post-COVID-19 economic recovery, which is so important in South Africa right now. And the one thing we've seen is that active management has come to the fore during the crisis. So the asset class that has patient capital, and that's often what is needed to weather economic shocks such as this, is the asset class that is private equity. So what can we learn from the events of 2020 that might shape the asset class into 2021? Well, let's welcome our panelists to find out. John Bellew, head of private equity at Bowmans, Langa Madonko, SABCA board member and deputy president of ABSIP, the Association of Black Securities and Investment Professionals, and John Gill, senior managing director at FTI Consulting. Now, we've got two Johns on the panel. So, John Bellew, initially we saw GPs respond to the crisis by focusing on the liquidity concerns and the cash flow of their portfolio companies and adjusting their strategies. It wasn't about new deals and transactions. They were largely put on ice. But as the year wore on and the dust settled, we did see some deals start to be announced. Broadly speaking, what were the highlights for you in the way the industry responded to COVID-19 in 2020?
Thanks, Michael. Yeah, I mean, I do think that post-March and the initial lockdown, we saw a definite drop-off in deal activity. We saw some deals continuing. Those were deals that really had a strategic imperative for the buyer and where there was a much more long-term view taken by the buyer. I guess the prime example of that would be the Adcock acquisition of Plush. We also saw, as you say, managers delving into their portfolio companies, trying to deal with the banks, trying to adjust strategy, which meant that the deal environment certainly did dip. But from about October, we became actually very busy, and I think there were a couple of reasons for that. I think that there were some good buying opportunities that were thrown up, companies that were solid but potentially needed cash. There were some restructurings that we became involved with, and then there were some African deals. I think a lot of the deals that we've been involved with do tend to take a longer-term view. They do tend to be companies where perhaps there's been less impact from the COVID pandemic. That's the rearview mirror. I think the year ahead is looking much more promising from a deal flow perspective than 2021 did, and I'm actually quite bullish for 2021.
And we'll come back to the reasons behind that. I want to go around the panel. Langa, looking from a practical perspective, how is remote working with all of the travel restrictions and everything that is attached to this new normal of COVID-19 impacted your ability to engage with not only investors like LPs, but your portfolio companies? How have you adapted to operating under this environment?
Yeah, I think 2021... It's a year we're looking forward to because the COVID pandemic in 2020 brought with it a significant amount of challenges. I think in the act of transacting, you actually want to have those in face-to-face interactions. You also want to have, for lack of a better term, some interactions that are of a social nature to get to fully understand the chemistry behind the team. You want to also understand fully the nuances of the businesses. But also human interaction is a key part of the ability of a fund manager to also capital raise. So you also want to have numerous interactions to explain the strategy, to explain how you'll be rolling out your philosophy and what you're investing in. And in 2021, we had to go virtual. While, yes, it does allow you to have the interactions, it's not the same in terms of the significance of human touch. So it did, in many instances, set back some of the fund managers in that some who had not yet started to engage with investees or engage with potential funders found themselves in a position where they were thoroughly on the back foot. But for some who had already began the interactions, as John said, you were able to conclude transactions on the basis of the traction that you had already made, and in some instances also attract capital on the basis of historic relations that have already been built.
And we'll come back to the issue on attracting capital as well, as we do see a decided shift towards emerging markets, a lot of that being driven by big macro factors over in the US and elsewhere. John Gill, from your vantage point, looking at things like due diligence and that aspect and element of transacting, how has COVID impacted the due diligence process?
Yeah, so Michael, very interesting. I mean, looking back, you know, I would have said traditionally it would be very difficult to do due diligence in what actually played out in the 2020 year, because so much of it is usually on-site interaction, talking, meeting with people, and both from the financial due diligence, the legal due diligence. And then I think, as Lange has said too, is a lot of that, the due diligence of the private equity players is meeting management teams and actually engaging with them and getting to know them directly. Having said that, you know, so much initially in around May, June of last year, we did the survey of the private equity industry and engaged with 19 different companies. And a lot of transactions went on hold as they were managing and looking at their portfolios. And some deals that were in play actually went on hold. And due diligence at that time was one of the things that was considered was going to be difficult. Having said that, in the latter half of 2020, I think there was a new norm and people got used to doing due diligences virtually. I mean, even by way of an example, I spoke to one of the very large international investment banks who said things like drones were now being used for site visits, things that they never would have done before. And from the financial and legal due diligences, I think, you know, the technology that's available for, you know, remote due diligences, data room processes, have come up and so much that makes that process so much easier now that right now, you know, due diligence in the 2021 year, if we go back into remote, I don't think that'll be a hiccup any longer in terms of holding up processes. That they happen, and in terms of due diligence and activity, just in terms of what John was saying too, things went a bit colder in that second quarter. The third and fourth quarter, and to where we are now, lots of transactions in the private equity space in play, being due diligence. So I think we're going to see a 2021 year that looked far better in terms of activity than 2020 did.
Now, John Bailey, jokingly, before we started this, you said you're probably at that stage in your career where people ask you and invite you to give history lessons more than advice, because you've been around since the very beginning of the private equity industry in the country. Looking back with that kind of historical lens, could you ever have imagined how the industry would have evolved and transformed to this point where we can do digital due diligence with drones? And, you know, chatting to Uri Maria van Sarada the other day, we're using AI now in due diligence. What stands out for you as some of the biggest changes, the transformative changes in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think that South Africa adapted to private equity on as a real kind of early starter. Raised a lot of capital in the early days, and the sort of pioneers in the field almost seeded the industry. You know, people would work for a private equity house and then spin themselves out and create their own firm. And as they did that, so, you know, the market matured. We ended up with sector funds, with, you know, funds targeting different market segments. I guess, you know, I started out as a Keller candidate attorney without any idea of how the industry would evolve, but I'm delighted with the way it has evolved, and I'm delighted also with the way the broader African industry is starting to evolve. So I think the asset class is firmly established. In terms of technology, I think even for us as legal professionals, we've been amazed at how quickly the digital revolution took over from about March last year. As of the 15th of March last year, when I went into self-isolation, I'd never heard of Teams, I'd never been on a Zoom call, and within a week I was doing both. So, you know, even relics like myself have had to drag ourselves kicking and screaming into the 21st century and adapt to the new way of working. And it's been fine. I mean, I think for us, legal due diligence in particular is something we've always been able to do through virtual data rooms. So there hasn't been a huge change. The use of technology to assist in diligences is definitely helping, helping to keep costs down. And I think we'll continue. I think, you know, I'm not sure that it will ever replace the in-person, in-the-office kind of vibe that you really need to build a team and to build your brand. But I think the world of work has changed. I don't think it's changed fundamentally, but I don't think that we will ever be rigid 8 to 5 people again. We'll be much more flexible. And I think that's the same in the industry. I think we've all recognized that what counts is the intellectual output, and whether you do that remotely from your home office or in person in the office, whether you communicate it in person or through some sort of electronic medium, frankly, it doesn't really matter all that.
Yep. As we look into our crystal balls, Langer, and we try and pick out which are those big themes, which are the areas that are going to drive activity in the private equity industry. Prior to COVID, we saw a big theme in ESG. Now, quite frankly, I think environmental, social, governance factors have to be key risk factors in any transaction, but there were specific categories like impact investing in the South African context, things like infrastructure, real assets. What do you see as the big trends looking forward into 2021 that are going to be attractive for private equity buyers?
Now, I think carrying on from what John and John said, I think technology is definitely one of the big themes that I think is going to remain in the fore. I think we're still going to have pockets of excellence that are unearthed in terms of making life in a remote working environment a lot more easier. We're going to have the emergence again still of tech in terms of assisting to facilitate a lot of other activities that we probably in the past took for granted as being on-site functions. I think we are seeing, of course, the emergence of and the growth of AI funds and technology funds that are looking to invest in some of these meeting platforms, as well as what is probably, from a South African perspective, forced IR rather than fourth IR. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that. But I also think, from a South African perspective, some of the more fundamental and more traditional asset classes, such as infrastructure that you have mentioned, will still play a key part. Because I think if COVID did anything, it showed the discrepancy in terms of the infrastructure accessibility throughout the different parts of the country. And I think one that I also think will be a big theme for this year is the area of business risk. I think, in particular, not necessarily businesses that have gone into business rescue, but more players who are able to turn around and to make more robust businesses that may have been teetering on the brink of collapse. I think we still need private equity to be saving jobs alongside creating new jobs. So labor-intensive sectors, being the focus of PE funds, will attract a lot of capital as well. So I think those are just some of the themes I think will emerge this year.
John Gill, the exit environment, how would you characterize the current private equity exit environment? Because what we are certainly seeing on the JSE is a bevy of delistings, a lot of that being driven by private equity buyers, obviously seeing a lot of value at current valuations. For an exit, though, it doesn't look like the best window to exit into. Is it more exiting to trade buyers? How do you see it playing out in 2021?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Again, just interestingly, the survey that we did last year about June, when we engaged with roughly 20 private equity companies, the feedback we got from that point in engaging with them was that exits were going to be delayed. There was going to be, and we've seen that play out. Some of the transactions we were involved in that were already in progress went on hold and haven't all come back to the market. So that did, that was a bit disruptive during 2020. I think, you know, and that was around June, but what we've certainly seen since then is a very fast rebound in terms of valuations from where they were in, you know, mid-year 2020. So our sense is that there is likely to be, during the current year, some of those transactions that had been delayed and or put on hold in 2020 coming back to the market in 2021. So, yeah, I think while 2020 might have been difficult, we think that might be slightly different in the current year. And that there may be some companies that will hold on for longer, because as you know, the private equity industry get their returns ultimately from cash flows during the period of holding the investment and then ultimately on exit. And so certainly for some of those to get their returns, there may have been this sense of having to delay even the exit until, you know, the time is better to get a higher return on exit and get interim cash flow at the same time.
And that is a big challenge, John Bellew, for private equity general partners. It's this issue of managing your cash flow, keeping a very highly skilled professional team together and incentivized over long periods of time when you're not harvesting, and delaying that even further creates more of a challenge. We have seen alternative structures arise, like permanent capital vehicles, for example. How do you see all of this playing out and impacting on the fund structure into the future?
I think that the, you know, I no longer see the entire industry moving to one model or another, but I do see the industry adopting the model which is appropriate for their particular industry sector. So, you know, permanent capital vehicles, many people will adopt because it stops the need to keep going to market, and we're still seeing a number of those coming through. We're also seeing people just continue to use the typical 2 and 20 model. I think we are seeing in the current environment that a number of funds that are coming close to the end of their lives are seeking extensions because looking to realize the assets in the portfolio in the current market, there's definitely been, as John said, a kind of delay around some exits. And I think most private equity funds will want to exit in a coordinated way rather than by way of fire sale. So do I see the industry changing fundamentally? No, I do see it settling down. And I think that it's becoming a question on structure of what is the right horse for your particular course. So, you know, real estate infrastructure may well need longer dated funds. The other thing that I think we are seeing in the industry is a lot of private equity houses are saying to us that they find this business of raising capital every 5 years to be absolutely exhausting. Mm. And although that's potentially driving the permanent capital vehicle, I think it's also driving people to become more generalized or to increase the number of assets that they have in their portfolio or the number of funds that they have in the portfolio so that they aren't dependent on just one fund and raising a successor fund every 5 years, because that makes your business very uncertain.
And you can rather smooth out those periods between harvesting and going out and raising new funds as well. Langer, from a fundraising perspective, and we mentioned it earlier, the fact that we are seeing a slight shift towards emerging markets at a global macro level due to what's going on over in the US. You've had a 10-year bull market there. Many expect that with the blue sweep and blue wave, we might see global investors looking elsewhere for returns, and that might be a good driver for emerging markets, also potentially dollar weakness as well. Are we starting to see that feed into easier fundraising? Because it has been tough over the last while, particularly in the South African context. You're trying to sell an emerging market with the Eskom story and the politics and the corruption and the governance. What's the fundraising environment looking like?
Yeah, I think COVID brought with it additional uncertainty about the South African market in particular, on top of what have been historic themes around why international investors were slow to put investments into SA. Amongst those were the issues of political uncertainty and corruption. But I think you're right. I think there's an increasing fascination or appetite for emerging markets. I think, speaking personally, looking over just the media period since the year has begun, there have been some intimations that some international investors would like to take a look at South Africa. But I think looking at our own local investment base, I think especially with the forecast and with the, let me call it, rhetoric coming out of government that there needs to be a drive to invest in infrastructure. They are all looking for a safe way to deploy capital into that space, and I think they place a greater reliance on private equity funds being able to deploy the capital where they say they will deploy than they do in a state-mandated program. So I think that has been positive for those players in the space that are focusing on infrastructure. And I think similar to what John and John have said, I think this looks to be a very positive year in terms of this, because I think even then, speaking to again to local and international investors, the inquiries are starting. And I think that is always a positive start, because what you're always looking for is a foot in the door to start the conversations around the capital raising.
I think bottom line, and as we've got around 5 minutes left, John Gill, I was chatting to Emile Detoy at Harris late last year, following on from the Batsita retirement conference, and obviously the conversation back then was Regulation 28, the ANC thinking about potentially introducing prescribed assets. That's receded somewhat into the background, but there is this desire to find a way to fund this great infrastructure drive that is the centerpiece of the government's economic turnaround and recovery program. Is South Africa investable? Are private equity funds keen to get involved at this stage without any coercion, just on the fundamentals in infrastructure in particular?
Yeah, Michael, I think so. And as you know, I think SAFCA has done a lot of work with the industry and trying to, you know, get some regulatory changes, section 28, to then, you know, allow a greater proportion of pension fund money to be able to invest into that asset class. And I think there is, as has been said in this this conversation already, I think there's a dire need for investment in infrastructure. If you just look to see in the last few weeks, you've seen Bight Bridge, you know, the whole process there and what's going to unfold. And now there's investment coming that's been announced for a very big investment into that particular, you know, call it a private partnership, but with private equity type funding going into that too. And I think there will be many, many of those kind of opportunities that will arise. Other border posts, water, electricity. We've seen education, which I think is also, you know, a long-term asset class that's going to change right now. Distance learning. So I think there is going to be. I think it is an asset class that will attract funds. I think, you know, from the Cyril Ramaphosa infrastructure and investment conferences that he's had, a lot of time and effort has gone into trying to attract international money and highlighting the need in investment in infrastructure. And there are focused private equity funds, you know, those that looked at renewable energy and other infrastructure projects that have made very good, significant returns over the past. And I do believe it will be an asset class and will attract more money going forward. And as I've said, you know, I think if the right regulatory changes can be made to your fund, pension fund money, additional pension fund money making its way into that asset class.
Lange, I just want to come back to you on that issue of Regulation 28, and to John's point, SAFCA did lobby for changes to Regulation 28, not so much on the prescribed asset side, but really around splitting hedge funds and private equity, separating those. Just take me back through the reasons and what the response so far from Treasury has been like.
Yeah, so I think the primary reason was the two assets in terms of their nature from an underlying asset perspective are quite different. And therefore, the regulation between the two needs to be different. And when investors look at them, they can't look at them and say they're considering apples and apples when it's actually apples and oranges. So I think we were saying let private equity stand on its own and let it be assessed as an asset class on its own by potential investors where citing the differences from hedge funds. And I think to date, we've had engagements with the National Treasury, and I think they've been positive in that they've listened to understand the rationale behind it and also to try and get an additional understanding of the benefit of investing in private equity. I think they still link as a little bit of a dark shadow over private equity, deemed in some spaces as being part of the dark arts. But I think we then have to take it upon ourselves as practitioners of private equity to get more understanding on what it is that we actually do and why it's significant for the economy, job creation. creation and for the future that we're trying to shape for South Africa.
No more barbarians at the gate or vulture capitalists if you talk about the VC guys. And you do see a lot of the blurring of the lines in tech, VC traditionally playing in that space, and our private equity also interested there. John, just as a last comment, we've got a minute to go. Where South Africa finds itself today, obviously COVID-19 set back the president's drive to recalibrate the state, to start turning things around after the state capture years. How confident are you about the prospects in South Africa?
If it's just John, very confident.
John Badu,
Yeah, I think 2021 is going to be a good year. I think that infrastructure is a bottomless pit. I think private equity likes it. I think there will be structures, a number of listed infrastructure funds that will allow pension funds to use their listed share allocation under Reg 28 to invest in infrastructure. So I think infrastructure will definitely continue to raise money, but I think other sectors will too, and I think we're going to see a lot more deals now that the new normal, people have got used to the new normal and they can transact again.
Yeah, absolutely, and the opportunities abound for those with patient capital to deploy. John Ballew, head of private equity and law firm Bowmans, Lunga Madonko, SAFCA board member and deputy president of ABSIP, and John Gill, who is Senior Managing Director at FTI Consulting, for the outlook for the asset class of the long-term outlook and patient capital. There are many reasons why private equity is one of the better placed asset classes to continue to weather the COVID-19 crisis.
Don't lose sight of the bigger picture. Get integrated electronic banking into your business systems. Search NetBank Bigger Picture Business Banking.